Welcome to Kingston Reid's Word to the Wise podcast series for HR and safety professionals.
Hello and welcome to today's podcast, all about how you can build workplace culture when you don't have the office as a crutch. I'm Nikki Morn, Senior Associate in Kingston Reid's Perth office. We also have
Paige O'Shea, Lawyer at the Kingston Reid Perth office.
And I'm Claire Jenkins, Senior Consultant with Azure.
After 2 years of drips and drabs of remote work, many businesses in Australia at least are starting to realise that we may not be able to return to the office as we've always known it. In today's podcast, we look at how we can nurture a successful culture without having to rely on the office for support. For years and years, we have been reliant on our offices and their natural osmosis of information and collaboration to support and strengthen a positive workplace culture. I'm the first to admit that I like the hustle bustle, the chit chat, the feeling of camaraderie and support that office working provides. I've also been using and has used the office as a crutch. So how do we build on our culture when we may not have the office to lean on anymore? Well, let's start with some facts and figures. Some may come as a bit of a surprise, others not so surprising. The Australian Safe Search report revealed that the top challenges faced by organisations during the pandemic was mental health. The top challenge employers faced managing workers operating from home was mental health. The most requested company workplace safety policies requested were options to work from home to remain, flexible work options, and working from home where employees show signs of illness. Late in 2021, the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare released a report that stated there was a rise in the use of mental health services and an increase in psychological distress during 2020, which unsurprisingly continued through 2021. Between 16th of March 2020 and 19 September 2021, so an 18-month odd period, almost 21 million MBS subsidised mental health related services were processed. In the 4 weeks to 19 September 2021, Lifeline saw several historical record high daily volumes, and just over 96,000 calls were taken in total, up 14.1% from the same period in 2020 and 33% from the same period in 2019. Beyond Blue received 27,099 contacts, up 20.9% from the same period in 2019. These figures might be quite alarming, but it's not necessarily all bad. Recent research from the COVID-19 Impact Monitoring Survey revealed that psychological distress fell from November 2020 to April 2021. In August 2021, following the most recent outbreak of COVID-19 in Australia, psychological distress worsened but remained lower than April to October 2020. So let's quickly have a look at the state of mental health specifically in a year of COVID remote working. Unfortunately, we have had to extend our reach to the US research for this, but statistics published by Pew Research Center in the US revealed that 64% of those working from home said their workplace was closed or unavailable to them. 36% said they were choosing to work from home. When asked how they felt about returning, 64% said they felt uncomfortable, 31% said they felt very comfortable. Parents with children reported having a harder time getting work done without interruptions. Against this context and background, I'm going to hand over to Paige to talk about the importance of workplace culture.
They are some really interesting statistics, Nikki. So like you said, let's have a chat about workplace culture and why we should all be thinking about workplace culture, particularly in the context of COVID-19 and working from home. Firstly, there are a number of benefits of a healthy workplace culture. These benefits include enhanced trust and cooperation between employees and employees and management, fewer disagreements between team members and management, more efficient workplaces and decision-making capabilities. A healthy workplace culture also attracts talent and it increases our employee retention rates. It positively impacts worker performance and it has a significant impact on the happiness and satisfaction of our employees. Additionally, there are a number of benefits of office working. Culture development in traditional face-to-face models is easier to establish, and there are a number of reasons for this, so settle in for the list. Workplace and social interactions are easier and occur more naturally and frequently when we're in an office. You can have a chat when you're walking down the hall or seeing a colleague in the kitchen. Communication in person is simpler and it allows for feedback. Important conversations and questions can also occur more easily. By comparison, reported issues that are experienced as a result of working from home as opposed to being in the office include a number of factors such as a lack of recognition and reward by our employees, a feeling of inadequate support from supervisors, poorly managed performance feedback, a feeling of isolation, loneliness, or potentially being disconnected from our co-workers and colleagues. Some employees report being unable to switch off from work and feel as though work is constantly surrounding them if it's always in your household. Having difficulty staying motivated and prioritising workloads. Employees report feeling uncertain about their progress or how they're performing when they're working from home. Working from home can also have an impact on your sleep hygiene, including insomnia and general sleep problems. Communications may become more transactional and lack those important social characteristics such as hand gestures or facial expression. And on top of all this, it's harder to have those more quiet, discreet conversations that we don't realise how important they are in an office working environment.
Absolutely. Thanks, Paige. And on the other hand, some of the commonly recognised benefits of working from home might include flexibility, saving time and money on commutes, and higher work-life balances and satisfaction. Interestingly, evidence comparing Australia's pre-pandemic working and pandemic working has also suggested that people who worked from home did not experience more loneliness than people who worked in a traditional workplace setting, and did not experience any material difference in their mental health compared to people who did not work from home. In terms of productivity, there is no clear evidence of the impact on productivity when working from home versus traditional in-person working environments. Similarly, the research shows that hours worked were not materially different between employees who worked from home and those who did not, according to the Productivity Commission. So with this, I hand over to Claire from Azure to talk about ideas and strategies for improving workplace culture in the current COVID-19 environment.
Well, thanks, Nick. And I think that's a great outline of the many considerations as we adapt to this new working environment. And of course, in that context, the key questions our Azure clients ask are around how they can navigate this and improve team culture while operating virtually. And as you mentioned before, in a pre-pandemic world, in-person shared experiences played a substantial role in shaping culture. However, clearly the pandemic's deprived us of those opportunities. And so as leaders, we're looking to new and different strategies to engage our people and sustain a team culture. And the current labour market and the talent shortages have meant that this is now business critical for so many of our clients. So while that does present a significant leadership challenge, the good news is that there's a number of really simple things we advise our clients to do, which can make a big difference to their team cultures and the employee experience. And as I outline these strategies, you'll see that there's a common thread related to making meaningful personal connections in a virtual world. And I read a great quote the other day suggesting a remote work location shouldn't mean a remote employee experience. And that's something I've shared with so many of my clients to help focus and guide their thinking in that area. So with that principle in mind, there's really five things we encourage our clients to focus on. The first is around investing to build trust. So we know that trust is the foundation and the backbone of all high-performing teams. Where team members genuinely believe their colleagues' intentions are good, when they can share their challenges or setbacks and be met with support, where that trust exists, we see that many of the issues and the tensions that arise within virtual teams, many of those are overcome or they fall away altogether. And it's for that reason we advise our clients to focus and invest in building team trust, both through adaptive leadership and more structured interventions where that's appropriate. And one trend we're seeing among our clients is really a consequence of the great resignation occurring now. We're working with many teams that have newly appointed leaders together with a fair proportion of new hires. And we partner with those teams to deliver structured programs which have been shown to build trust. Following on from this, we also advise our clients to be intentional in the way they connect. So as we know all too well, working virtually affords us far fewer opportunities to actually observe our colleagues and tune into those subtle non-verbal cues which indicate how someone might be feeling. And therefore, if we aren't intentional in the way we connect virtually and how frequently we do that, we're going to miss those important cues and the opportunity to act on them. So we advise our clients to be deliberate in the way they do this, to allow extra time for informal connections, and to know their people in and out of work and be doing this individually, one-to-one. In the current environment, there really isn't a risk of over-communicating, and rather it's actually important to communicate the same messages through different channels and thereby cater to different working styles too.
Absolutely, Claire, and in my view, this is just critical for assessing workers' welfare. By way of a practical example, so pre-COVID-19, pre-working from home, our Monday morning meetings and Friday check-ins. However, after the pandemic peaks, and particularly during periods where we were force isolated, these turned into daily check-ins and were as much about workload discussion and distribution as they were general welfare check and an acknowledgement that these can be difficult times. And they were fantastic for that, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And in acknowledging this, it's also vital that leaders model behaviours around self-care and disconnecting. And this is arguably the counterpoint to everything I was just saying around intentional connection. But simultaneously, it's also vital that our clients give themselves and their teams permission to be unavailable. The cognitive load of living through a pandemic, the mental health challenges you described before, Nick, and the incidence of burnout, it's all very evident. But we still see so many leaders attempting to operate as they did before the pandemic in always-on mode. And of course, that's no longer sustainable. We encourage our clients to be vulnerable with their teams, to acknowledge the challenges they face in this sense, and to role model being unavailable at times in order to care for themselves. And when leaders go first in doing this, they signal that it's safe for others to follow suit. And from a retention perspective, that's critical. The research shows that some 9 out of 10 employees are looking for flexible work, and over half of all employees will consider leaving their roles if they're not afforded more flexibility post-pandemic.
And Claire, I'm assuming that this somewhat stems from the inability in the current working from home environment to distinguish work from personal life. I mean, the idea that you shouldn't take your work home with you can become much more blurred if you don't have a long commute down the hallway from your office to your living room, correct?
Completely. And this has given rise to many employees feeling as though they're permanently connected and always on. And of course, while that isn't sustainable, it can also be risky to speak up and ask for what you need in this sense. And that's one of the reasons we also work with clients around creating a sense of belonging in their teams. And as humans, when we feel belonging, we also feel safe to speak up, feel free to be ourselves, to share our thinking and our ideas. We can ask for what we need to get through those difficult times. We expend less energy editing ourselves and holding back. And indeed, the data again shows that where people feel a sense of belonging at work, they're far more engaged and 3.5 times more likely to contribute at their best. So a sense of belonging is incredibly powerful when building your culture virtually. And to cultivate that, we know that one of the most impactful things leaders can do is simply checking in with their people. And exactly as we said earlier, checking in on people both personally and professionally. This can be as simple as spending 15 minutes to understand the things a colleague might be dealing with and how you can be of support of them. And again, through the pandemic, the research shows that people feel the greatest sense of belonging when others check in on them this way and as a whole person.
Yeah, thanks for raising that, Claire. It's a really important one in my opinion. One thing I understand a couple of businesses have done or are doing is create a COVID-19 wellbeing poll. And the idea there is to offer the team the opportunity to give management or executive feedback on the way they're supporting employees at this time, and to do that anonymously if they want. I guess it's just testimony to the importance of listening and truly being there, truly caring for your team.
Certainly it is. And my clients always reflect how the time they invest listening and connecting with people is time well spent. What they learn is powerful and enables them to adapt and flex their leadership style to suit the context as well. And in that vein, the other thing we often speak with clients about is personalised work. And so this is an emerging trend we're seeing as the pandemic rolls on. Because we've all had to work remotely for the past 2 years, it's afforded that many more choices in the way we perform work. We're no longer constrained to a typical model of working in person, 8 till 5, in the same building every day. And instead, we can customise many of the aspects of the way we perform work. Though it should be acknowledged that that wasn't without tension, as any homeschooling parent would attest. However, what we're beginning to see is job crafting and role personalisation, whereby people are carving out roles which play to their strengths and realise their potential. So the challenge for leaders becomes understanding the combination of particular strengths in a given team and to leverage those to best impact. And for those reasons, we're really advising our clients to depart from the traditional workforce design and to refocus on how they can enable personalised work in their business.
They're really great suggestions, Claire, and something really important for all of our clients to keep in mind, particularly as we continue to face the challenges of COVID-19. So for the back part of today's podcast, we wanted to touch on a few legal considerations from the employer's perspective, including with regards to employers' work, health and safety obligations, the considerations relating to their duty of care and the importance of a focus on people, policies and process. So as a starting point, let's have a chat about the employer's duty of care. As many employers will know, they have a duty of care to their employees. And more specifically, this is a duty on the employer to avoid reasonably foreseeable risk of injury, which includes psychological injury. We know from the 2005 case of Kohler and Seabross that a psychological injury may be triggered by stress, and in the times of COVID-19, there is plenty of stress about. Under this duty of care, employers must make reasonable adjustments in relation to mental health issues and disability protection. So how does this duty of care specifically link to COVID-19 and mental health? Well, there's a duty of care and safety, and this includes from risks, as I've said, of psychological injury. And this can apply when work is performed from another location. So it's important to bear in mind that just because an employee is working from home, that your duty still applies. As we've discussed, the COVID-19 pandemic has brought a whole load of work-related stresses, including workplace change, increased demand, reduced job security, and isolation. And in addition, we will also eventually, if you haven't already, depending on where you reside, have to grapple with the difficulties and hazards of returning to the workplace. And this includes dealing with organisational change, fears of illness once exposed to others, and potentially fears around undergoing testing or obtaining RAT tests, as we know they're hard to find. The duty of care in relation to COVID-19 and mental health also extends to concepts of remote bullying. Bullying can increase during working from home periods through exclusion, miscommunication, a lack of support, lack of supervisory oversight on behalf of the employer. Employees should also consider their duty of care in terms of when they're dealing with a stressed community. Stress was particularly heightened and in some cases continues to be with respect to COVID-19, and we can be experiencing client and customer aggression as well as physical distancing, which all may have an impact on our employees' mental health. Employers should also consider their consultation and communication in part of maintaining their duty of care. As Claire alluded to, this may include regular check-ins with your employees. Those clear communications about change in your workplace are really important, as well as recognition and reward for our employees' efforts and continuing to monitor their workloads. Employers should also ensure intra-colleague support, and this can be done through the implementation of buddy systems, grievance support officers, giving our employees somebody to lean on. Maintaining your duty of care might also see you introduce some workplace changes. Like Claire alluded to, this could be a change of our rosters and our breaks when our employees start and finish work, job rotations, task variations, restraining. We're just looking to do things that make life a little bit easier if possible. And finally, in upholding your duty of care in the context of COVID-19, it's really important to make sure our employees still feel that support. It's a clear communication of workplace rights, such as personal leave or special leave, and encouraging our employees to take that if they need that leave, considering the flexible workplace requests, having the availability of employee assistant programs, and being able to refer to specialist services if our employees need it. With all those factors in mind, there's a number of risks to employers if they fail to comply with their duty of care obligations. And from a legal perspective, this may include workers' compensation claims if an employee suffers a work-related injury, common law injury claims if we reach the required level of impairment, bullying and harassment claims, disability discrimination claims, adverse action claims, particularly those relating to an injury in employment due to a mental health disability, which may have arisen out of COVID-19, unfairness claims with regards to workplace processes such as dismissal, operational claims including absenteeism, productivity, low morale, increased workload for other employees, as well as all the external risks that exist, including commercial and community repudiation, legal exposure of the organisation and our personnel, legal costs, and even statutory penalties. So there's a large number of things to think about when you are trying to ensure you satisfy that duty of care. Duty of care may also lead us into a situation with respect to performance management. And performance management is, in the context of remote working, is a live issue. When you have an employee who is ill or injured, as they may be as a result of COVID-19, it is important that they are carefully managed. And as we've alluded to, COVID-19 and the working from home environment may place a genuine strain on an employee's health and particularly their mental health. And it is for that reason that performance management methods in the context of working from home needs to be addressed. Before we discuss our suggestions for performance management in a work from home environment, as a first stop, consider adapting your workplace's everyday behaviours. These small changes can have a significant impact when managing your employees who are working from home. As Nick and Claire have both touched on, having Monday morning meetings and Friday check-ins are as much about workload and discussion and distribution of workload as they are as to be a general welfare check-in. This is a good opportunity for employers to identify any employees who may be struggling and to foster that workplace environment. Continue to promote a positive workplace culture and encourage employees to speak up if they have any concerns when working from home. These methods will assist you in promoting a cohesive workplace environment and may prevent the need for a comprehensive performance management process. However, with that being said, there are several things employers can do when engaging in the performance management process. In the best of circumstances, performance management can be a difficult issue to approach, and a remote working environment can definitely add to that complexity. So here are our tips for performance management in a working from home environment. First, keep performance and illness or injury separate. If the reason for performance management is not related to an illness or injury, ensure the performance or conduct issue is clearly identified. Any performance management process should be conducted separate from a process relating to illness or injury. Don't discipline employees for suffering from an injury or illness specifically. Rather, employers should be focusing on a failure of the employee to comply with workplace processes, policies, or procedures. If the performance management issue relates to absenteeism, consider doing some further investigation before undertaking the performance management process. This may include considering the extent and the pattern of the employee's absence, reviewing evidence provided by the employee as to their absence, as well as considering the impact that the absence has on the employee's ability to perform the inherent requirements of their role. When undertaking the performance management process, make reasonable adjustments to performance targets if necessary. This will also require consideration of whether the adjustment is reasonable. Determining whether the adjustment is reasonable will require the employer to consider a number of factors, including the benefit and detriment to the employee, how much the adjustment will cost the employer, and whether the adjustment is of a limited or ongoing duration. You should also ensure that throughout the performance management process, support is provided internally or through your company's employee assistance program, and continually remind your employees of the availability of these support networks. Continue to follow company policies and procedures for performance management is also probably one of our top tips. However, with that being said, it's also important to ensure that performance management process is modified as necessary to meet the specific needs of the employee who is the focus. For example, if you have an employee who has limited phone connection, don't offer performance management by way of a phone call. Offer to have a Teams meeting or use video connection. If the performance management process is not modified as necessary, the failure may, amongst other things, lead to an exacerbation of the illness or injury, increase the likelihood of long-term absence, particularly where the matter involves a mental illness or is stress-related, cause a lack of procedural fairness, which can render a dismissal down the track to be unfair, and it may indicate that management action has not been reasonable. But like we've gathered, a flexible workplace is inevitable and it seems to be here for the long run. So how do we manage flexible work? First, mitigate against isolation. Ensure you're having those regular check-ins when employees are working from home. And if you have a split office with some employees at home and some employees in the office, ensure that employees working from home are invited to participate in workplace activities. And if they can't come into the office, send them a video link. Make sure they're feeling included. Ensure that your work is allocated in a fair and equal manner. It can be easy to forget employees who are not in the office, so make sure they remain front of mind and are equally considered for work as those who are still in the office. Ensure work and performance requirements are clear and demonstrable. Address issues quickly and have those open conversations. Communications between the employer and employee can build trust, avoid confusion and uncertainty. And in a working from home environment, communications with staff that are regular will assist in managing expectations and ensure a supportive work environment is maintained. Ensure you can properly manage your employees' performance, as well as them meeting deadlines and achieving outcomes. Consider things like what are the employees' key duties, whether these duties need to be done at a set location or whether they can be done from another environment. Consider who the employee interacts with in their normal course of work, and what technological solutions are in place or can be put in place to support the employee in meeting deadlines. Finally, Claire and Nick, it's important that employees remember that flexible work may not look the same for all employees. Some employees may require a flexible work environment for a shorter period of time than others. It's really important for everyone to remember that what works for one employee may not work for another.
Thanks, Paige. To tie things up, we'd like to finish today by touching on the importance of clear, transparent, and workable workplace policies. As I'm sure almost everyone is aware, there's recently been a huge focus across all industries on mandatory COVID-19 vaccination policies, directions, and enforcement. I don't intend to go into this today, considering our focus is on building workplace culture. However, it is critical to recognise the policies can be hugely important in setting workplace expectations, demonstrating positive, progressive and appropriate workplace principles, values and culture, and managing and supporting employees' health, safety, fitness and return to work. So what am I getting at here specifically? Well, policies should represent the do's and don'ts of a business. Ultimately, they articulate a company culture and they define who you are as a company. In terms of identifying missing policies, consider whether it may be timely and appropriate to introduce a new policy or amend a current one to include things such as a work from home policy, a flexible working policy, a return to work policy encompassing physical and mental health considerations, possibly update or supplement the company's code of conduct, and possibly a mental health policy, focusing on looking after your team in these challenging times. I'm also talking about adapting your current workplace policies to the present situation. Avoid waiting for everything to go back to normal. It's unlikely to happen. Be proactive or reactive, depending on your circumstances and location. keeping in mind that government directions and the COVID-19 situation and prevalence in each state and territory of Australia is changing rapidly. And update your policy so that they can support your people and your business. If you already have a flexible working policy, for example, you may consider revisiting it to make sure it reflects your team's new needs in terms of the time they can dedicate to children or elderly dependents while working from home. My tip is to think of your policies as a living creature, changing and evolving with your business and with any government updates or new legislation responding to COVID-19, including how this will impact the workplace, for example, social distancing and masks and other preventative transmission measures that might reasonably be introduced or codified. Finally, ensuring policies are kept front of mind by everybody in the business. With no physical location for them to live, your policies need to be accessible from a communal hub, intranet, HR resource page, whatever it might be, somewhere the team can visit regularly and do not need to search for. There have been so many legal case examples reinforcing the value of effective workplace policies, but one that comes to mind is the case of Batista v. Wells Fargo International Finance, which was a Federal Circuit Court of Australia decision, actually a general protections case. And in that case, the judge made a point of stating that the employer was proactive in supporting its employees through its conduct and policy and practice, and that they made several previous attempts to refer the employee to its EAP, ultimately finding that the employee's conduct and performance issues could be severed or disaggregated from the employee's disability. And the employee in that case was ultimately unsuccessful in their claim. Lastly, a few handy hints on how you might adapt your processes. Unfortunately, or fortunately, in a world where we don't have as regular access to the office as we used to, and where there is such a rapid shift from life as we currently know it, or did know it, we need to change the way we work. But there is still scope to thrive and either maintain or rebuild culture in a more remote world. So my tip is embrace the fat. And by that, I don't mean stick your finger in a tub of peanut butter. I mean embrace the practices and benefits of FAT, feedback, alignment, and transparency. Feedback. A constant exchange of feedback is an essential ingredient for effective growth. Unfortunately, remote working means that you can't turn to the person next to you for input quite so easily, but important conversations can happen even when working remotely. As Paige has touched on now, performance reviews, feedback exchanges, and one-to-one meetings can and should be a key company focus and consistent across the whole business. In respect of alignment, whilst we may not all be sharing the same physical office space, this does not signal the end for collaboration, teamwork, and synthesis. Develop a framework for staying aligned across colleagues, across teams, across offices. This will not only work magic for worker motivation and performance, but it is also critical for your workers to stay focused on more holistic company goals. Transparency. For some people, this is already an anxiety-inducing, daunting situation full of unanswered questions. The worst thing we can do is add to that anxiety and leave things open for interpretation. Now is the time to look at your compensation and salary review processes, your learning and career development frameworks, your career progression policies, to make it clear what workers need to do to progress in their career and have visibility over their development expectations and goals.
Thanks, Nick. Embrace the fat. Love it. So just to wrap up, to build a culture that thrives in a world where we don't have our offices to lean on, we need to prepare our people, codify our policies, and adapt our processes. The three Ps: people, policies, processes. Doing so properly and with due care will set your business up to thrive, no matter what the rest of 2022 has left for us. Thanks, Claire and Nick, for your assistance and time today. I hope this has left our listeners with some invaluable takeaways and some food for thought. For now, that's all from us. Thanks for listening.